From PRI, Public Radio International, and KCRW Santa Monica, this is To the Point.
Can tea parties brew real political change? Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is To the Point from Public Radio International, a daily look at the issues Americans care about most. Some polls show hypothetical Tea Party candidates with more support than Democrats or Republicans, but the key word is hypothetical. As the Tea Party convention begins today in Nashville, it's not clear that any candidate could get away with claiming Tea Party association. Republicans are trying to capture their anger, but Tea Partiers lump both major parties into one hated establishment. Why have so many original organizers pulled out of this week's convention? Will Sarah Palin damage her image by appearing and taking a big fee? Will the convention define a political movement or dramatize differences that can't be resolved? First, here's the news.
Support for To the Point comes from subscribers of KCRW Santa Monica and from the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Hello again, Warren Alney, back with To the Point. Tea Partiers are opposed to federal spending, health care reform, Wall Street banks, and dinners of steak and lobster. They don't like Democrats or a lot of Republicans. What are they for? Can they make a political difference in this election year? We'll look for some answers as the Tea Party convention opens in Nashville. First, this news update. Toyota has recalled some 5.3 million vehicles, but not the Prius, the hybrid symbolic of engineering excellence, at least not yet. Early today, the company publicly conceded there are problems with braking systems on the 2010 Prius. Hours later, NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, opened an investigation. Kate Linebaugh is in Detroit for the Wall Street Journal, and Kate, it's good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
There have been some reports that there will be a recall of 2010 Priuses. What do you hear?
Yeah, the Japanese newspaper Nikkei is reporting in their paper, their Friday paper, that Toyota has decided to recall 2010 Priuses that would affect about 270,000 vehicles. Right now, Toyota in Torrance is saying that they have no information on a decision by Toyota to recall the Priuses. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration also says it has no confirmation that Toyota will be recalling Priuses. It says that even if they were to, it wouldn't affect the status of their investigation, and that if Toyota thinks that there's unreasonable risk in those vehicles, then it's legally bound to recall them and stop the sales of them.
What kinds of complaints have there been about the 2010 Prius?
It involves braking in sort of bumpy, slick, or otherwise kind of dicey conditions where it momentarily loses braking ability, you know, say when you hit a pothole. A guy in my office here actually says he has the same problem in an earlier model of his Prius.
Is this something that really has to do with the braking system then, or is it something that people might be mistaken about because simply of the nature of this system and the way it works?
Toyota says that they have corrected the problem, so I think they believe that there was a glitch in the braking system. The Prius brakes are different from the brakes in their other vehicles because they do regenerative braking to repower the batteries. So I think they've reprogrammed some of the computer to adjust for this.
Wow. How important is Prius to Toyota in general?
Prius is sort of where Toyota is staking their future. Toyota believes strongly in hybrid technology going forward. Earlier this year, at the Detroit Auto Show, in fact, Jim Lentz said he had received approval to create a sub-brand of Prius vehicles. He calls it a family, and they unveiled what could possibly be the second member of that group, which the auto press calls a baby Prius. Having a shadow over Prius is not a good thing. You know, what Prius has received top marks. It is the best-selling hybrid. It, you know, has really given Toyota a leg up in consumer perception that it's at the forefront of advanced technology. Now, it doesn't want to lose that momentum that it has with the Prius brand.
Again, Kate Linebaugh is in Detroit for the Wall Street Journal. This is To the Point from PRI. Well, you say that this has been a very successful, the most successful hybrid, 270,000 2010 models so far. How does that compare to the rest of the fleet in the United States?
Toyota generally dominates the hybrid technology, and of course you're asking me a question that I don't have the answer to at hand, but I believe that Toyota accounts for more than 70% of the hybrid vehicles that are sold in the U.S., and Prius is the majority of that. For the record, though, the 270,000 is in the U.S. and Japan.
And Japan. So that's the total sales of Priuses.
Of the 2010 Prius, yeah.
What about the price so far of Toyota stock?
Well, Toyota stock has slipped. Toyota did announce a surprise profit overnight, but I think its public perception has probably slipped more than its stock price. Toyota has a lot of money in the bank that will help help it through financing these recalls and the lost sales that it foresees. The company put out a projection of that this will cost the company about $2 billion.
That's the total recall so far. Would that include the Priuses, or would that be, they have to be on top of that?
That would be on top of it, yes. And that also includes lost sales. A senior Toyota executive estimates that they will lose sales of about 100,000 vehicles globally because of the recalls. Again, that was before this Prius situation really took off.
Okay, you could say that for Prius, this is a good investment, though, because their reputation's on the line.
Exactly. I think Toyota is really, I mean, their message has been they're putting customers first. They really want to address these safety, nip these safety measures in the bud, and they are going all out to do that. I think the problem that Toyota is facing is this question of lingering issues. There are people who have been reporting similar braking issues with their Priuses of earlier generations.
Okay, Kate Linebaugh, again in Detroit for the Wall Street Journal. Many thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Despite the recession, healthcare spending is jumping up faster than ever, approaching 20% of the entire economy. We'll talk about that on Reporter's Notebook in a moment. Can Tea Parties brew real political change? To the Point.
To the Point thanks Factiva from Dow Jones for its use of Factiva.com. With news and information from 10,000 global sources, Factiva is a resource for companies whose continued success rests upon timely strategic news on their industry, competitors, and themselves.
Hello again, Warman Alney, back with To the Point. As the Tea Party Convention opens in Nashville today, Tea Partiers themselves are struggling to figure out if they have a movement, an uneasy adjunct of the Republican Party, or a collection of angry protesters who can't get along. Kate Zernike is in Nashville for the New York Times. And Kate, good to have you on our program.
Thanks.
A little bit of background. Who are the who are the people we call the Tea Partiers?
Well, it's a very diverse group. The group that's meeting in Nashville this weekend is sponsored by Tea Party Nation, which is probably it's easiest to think about it as sort of a Facebook for conservatives or for Tea Partiers. It's sort of this unapologetically commercial version of a Tea Party. Other Tea Parties are much more local, sort of truly grassroots. This is certainly started by small grassroots groups, but it is definitely a bigger, more commercial enterprise.
And the fact that it is a commercial enterprise has caused some problems.
Yeah, and they've had a lot of people pull out because people who've been involved in Tea Parties feel that it's sort of antithetical to the movement, to the spirit of the movement, to have this for-profit establishment.
Well, these are conservatives. They can't be against making profit. That sounds like a contradiction.
Well, no, I think they just think that this is the beauty of the Tea Party to them is the more spontaneous, much more local nature of it, and it's very for instance, there's a lot of debate about whether they should even have leaders because they sort of feel that this is, you know, they're upset with people who are leading the country now, and they sort of think that any movement, anyone in office is a bad thing. So there's sort of an anti-establishment vibe.
Anti-establishment. So that has come up when Republicans have made an effort to take advantage of this.
That's absolutely true. They have sort of resisted. They've resisted interference from either of the parties, but it's more, perhaps more surprising that they are not more inclined to work with Republicans. They're certainly more ideologically in sync with the Republican Party, but they think the Republicans have been really enablers of Democrats in what they see as runaway government spending.
And in fact, in some places, upstate New York being the most conspicuous, they have run candidates against the establishment Republican candidates.
Yes, that's true. Doug Hoffman in New York, in the New York 23 race, which was a special congressional election in November, which has sort of become a rallying cry for a bunch of different strains of the Tea Party movement. They pushed forward the conservative candidate. He was not the Republican Party chose someone who they thought was far too moderate. She ended up pulling out 3 days before the election and throwing her support to the Democrat who won the seat. And it had been a Republican district for decades, so this is a real blow to Republicans. But the conservatives said to Republicans, look, this just shows you should have run a conservative candidate.
What about Sarah Palin and her role at the convention? She's going to be the keynoter on Saturday.
She is the keynoter. What's sort of interesting about that is that she accepted the invitation to speak here, where she's getting paid anywhere from, we hear anything from $100,000 to $120,000. She declined an invitation to speak at CPAC, which is a big conservative confab in Washington a couple weeks from now. So in many ways, you could look at Sarah Palin and say that she's aligning herself with this more grassroots outsider Tea Party movement than she is with establishment conservative Washington.
On the other hand, she's been criticized for taking a fee.
Absolutely, but you know, I think we've seen, you know, she's got several deals where she is making money. I think that's, you know, as her would have been son-in-law said, perhaps it's one of her goals is to make some money here.
With regard to Palin, some Tea Partiers have their doubts about her because she agreed to campaign with John McCain.
Yeah, that's been a problem for her. They see, you know, a lot of these people sat out the 2008 election because they just couldn't embrace a candidate like John McCain, who they see as too much of a moderate. They don't like his position on campaign finance reform. They don't like his position on the environment, although he's now changed it because he's got a race himself. But yes, indeed, it's caused some problems for her. And indeed for Scott Brown, who is the candidate who won Teddy Kennedy's seat in Massachusetts a few weeks ago, he also has said that he would campaign for McCain and recorded a phone call for him. And this made him a little bit, took the shine off of him a little bit for some conservatives.
Was that after he was elected?
Yeah, it was the week after he was elected.
So that didn't come up during the campaign, which I take a lot of Tea Partiers were involved in that campaign.
Yeah, I mean, that race was interesting. You saw a lot of Tea Partiers from across the country going to Massachusetts to campaign for him. They were raising money on their websites. They really thought that first of all, this could block the health care vote, which it effectively will, because he's now the 41st Republican. But there was also some symbolism to taking back Ted Kennedy's seat.
What about the press, and who's been granted credentials and who hasn't?
The Tea Party convention in Nashville this weekend is allowing CNN and Fox News and I believe NBC to broadcast parts of it. They did not allow, I guess, the local paper in. They did not allow the New York Times in. They put out a press release this morning saying that they had inquiries from 125 press organizations and had given priority to international news organizations because they really want people abroad to see this truly American movement at work.
Did they indicate to you why it was that the New York Times wasn't getting a credential?
No, they did not. They said, originally they said they didn't want any press there. Then they said they would only want press that had been favorable to the Tea Party. Today's release said that it was not a matter of being favorable, that they did accept people who'd been unfavorable to them. They just wanted a range of media outlets there.
Okay, Kate Zernike, national correspondent for the New York Times, trying to cover the Tea Party convention in Nashville. It's good to have you on our program.
Thanks very much.
Tony Shreve is a local Tea Party organizer in Dandridge, Tennessee. He is a member of the American Patriotic Taxpayers. And Tony Shreve, it's good to have you on our program.
Thank you, sir.
My understanding is that you are one of those who has pulled out.
Yes, sir. I'm not supporting the convention down in Nashville. It does not represent the grassroots movement in the nation or local or state. The majority of Tea Parties in the state of Tennessee are not promoting the event, and they have also been banned from their social networking site.
Now, is this because it's a profit-making enterprise that is putting it on?
That we're not supporting it?
Yeah.
Well, it's not because, well, the for-profit definitely raises some concerns. Personally, knowing the people that are putting on the convention, I can tell you that they are definitely in it for the profit. I don't believe they have pure intentions in what they're doing down there. And it's very concerning because a lot of the people that are going are good conservatives. There's a couple of, you know, sponsors and people like that that are going to this event that don't realize exactly what they're getting themselves into.
What about Sarah Palin and her fee reported to be upwards of $100,000?
Yeah, she did charge that amount. I don't really want to comment on that. I just think that she's wanted in a lot of places across the country, and you know, that was her fee, and she plans to put it in conservative, you know, areas. So we'll see what happens.
She says she won't keep it, but she's going to spend it on conservative enterprises. Are you a supporter of Sarah Palin?
Yes, I am.
So I take it you're somewhat concerned about her acceptance of the fee.
I'm not as much concerned with that as I am that she is coming to this event to talk to what she calls the grassroots Tea Party people. I really think that she's missing the point. The grassroots people aren't going to be there, the majority of them, because they can't afford it.
Who is going to be there?
I couldn't tell you. I don't have a guest list.
But when you say they can't afford it, what kind of fees are you looking at?
$600 for the convention, and then if you can fork out $350 to eat at her speech, that's the prices.
And that's a big dinner with steak and lobster?
Steak and lobster, yes. Which I will say this, those prices definitely aren't aimed at the average grassroots, middle-class American. And, you know, that's very concerning to a lot of the people here in the state of Tennessee. And one of the reasons we're not supporting this event, it's just, I mean, we're not going to fork out that kind of money. We're out here trying to, you know, educate people, get them educated on candidates and things like that, and doing a lot of grassroots things without charging $600 and eating late lobster and steak.
Tony Shreve, again, a local Tea Party organizer in Dandridge, Tennessee, member of the American Patriotic Taxpayer. Stay with us, if you will, Tony Shreve. We want to come back to you. Tom Fitton is president of Judicial Watch. That's a conservative, nonpartisan legal watchdog group in Washington. It's gone over after Vice President Cheney as well as Democrats. Tom Fitton, good to have you on our program.
Hey, thanks. Good to be with you again.
You've decided to become a sponsor of this convention rather late in the game. Why is it, and what do you say to Tony Shreve, who says that the grassroots folks can't afford to be there and that the people running it are not people with pure intentions?
Well, I've talked with the people running it, and at least one of the folks running it, and they strike me as, you know, just good Americans who are trying their best to do something that they're not used to doing, which is running a national conference like this for the first time. And, you know, from our perspective, we see this as an opportunity to gain access to 600-plus activists and tell them about what we're doing and maybe help them do what they want to do a bit more effectively. So this was really a no-brainer for us. We're very supportive of the Tea Party movement. We see them as fellow travelers in the efforts to combat government corruption. And we understand as new movements emerge that you'll get some of this back and forth among the leaders of these movements as some rise, some fall, and some dispute how others are operating. But in the end, this looks to me like a legitimate convention. They're going to be having several hundred people that is gaining national and international recognition to the movement. So in the end, I think it's going to be a good thing, and I appreciate the concerns that Tony has. But, I've been around the movement for a while. I've seen conferences and how they're run, and you know, my initial concern was that these guys were new to the game and they didn't know really how to run a conference as opposed to their being in it for the buck. And I think in the end, if they get a little bit of money, it's not going to be that much, and maybe it's warranted given the amount of work and personal effort they've put into it. So I think it's a good thing in the end, and it's going to be a great convention for those who go to it, because these conventions generally are really incomparable in terms of their ability to motivate people and get people thinking about new issues and giving them new new excitement as they go out and continue their good work.
Again, Tom Fitton's president of Judicial Watch, now one of the sponsors of the Tea Party Convention in Nashville, Tennessee. This is To the Point from PRI. Tom Fitton, what do you say to Tony Shreve's concern that people who are truly grassroots people can't afford $600 for the convention, $350 to eat steak and lobster and listen to Sarah Palin?
Well, I think that just comes from the fact that this is a convention that's happening for the first time. A lot of public policy conferences, you have groups that are long established that are able to subsidize the rate for attendees, and I don't think they have that ability here. So in response to the criticisms that in terms of keeping the grassroots out, I think they're trying to make the convention more widely available on the Internet and such, which is a good thing. And these conventions aren't free to hold, and the CPAC convention, which we're also co-sponsoring, is expensive to go to as well. But they get thousands of grassroots activists. These, I think, people are going to be grassroots activists and who are committed to the cause. So we thought it was important to show our support by not only co-sponsoring, but we're happy to be able to speak as well.
Tony Shreve, back to you again in Dandridge, Tennessee, our member of American Patriotic Taxpayers who's withdrawn from the convention. Does anything that Tom Fitton said make sense to you? For example, that this convention is an opportunity to gain national and international exposure for what he refers to as the movement.
Well, there's a couple of points that I would like to make. First of all, I think that there could be some good educational classes come out of this. As far as the convention itself and the price tag, many of the Tea Party groups in the state of Tennessee met with Mr. Phillips and asked him to open this venue up in a convention center where 30 or 40,000 people could come for $30 a piece, only to have an email returned to us saying that we didn't have the same vision and values of the group. Now, you know, this event could have been done very differently. It could have been focused on the grassroots level. You could have had 30 or 40,000 people go and pay $25 or $30 a piece, which is a more affordable price. Why we want to keep this so intimate and so high priced and elegant is beyond me. It's definitely contradictory of what the Tea Party movement stands for. I guess that, you know, the grassroots groups in Tennessee, you know, we were all shut out, and Judson wanted to do it his way. And I think that this thing was executed totally wrong.
Tom Fitton, we just have a minute before we need to go to a break. What about this, Judson Phillips, the organizer, the man who you say is not making much money on this, but what about the idea of 30 or 40,000 people at $30 a piece?
Well, you know, the organizers decided to go a different way, and you know, Tony's idea sounds like a good one. Sometimes people act on one idea versus the other, and it doesn't mean, in the end, the other idea is illegitimate. So it's a debate, and the Tea Party Convention is happening, and I think in the end it's going to be good. There could be other things that go on, and this is not the beginning end or even the middle of the movement. This is one aspect of the movement and an important one.
Tom Fitton again, president of Judicial Watch, now one of the sponsors of the Tea Party Convention. On Reporter's Notebook a bit later, as the deficit rises, the federal government is now picking up almost 50% of all health care spending. Back in a moment with To the Point from PRI.
A complete archive of past programs is available online at kcrw.com/to the point. You can also order a CD copy by calling 1-888-600-5279.
Warren Allen back with To the Point, talking today about the Tea Party Convention opening today in Nashville, Tennessee. Cost $600 or $300 more to go to the dinner with steak and lobster to hear Sarah Palin on Saturday. There's been controversy from amongst those within the conservative movement that the Tea Party represents, and we're hearing about it today. John Hawkins runs the blog rightwingnews.com. And John Hawkins, good to have you on our program.
Fantastic to be back with you, Warren.
Tell us, if you will, your take on this flap that we're hearing about over what's going on in Nashville.
Well, I've criticized it on my blog, and I just want to make it clear, I don't have any problem with Judicial Watch or Eagle Forum, Smart Girl Politics, Sarah Palin. They're just trying to come out and reach out to activists. The problem I do have with it is that from looking at this whole thing, it seems to me that a lot of people in Tennessee helped make the Tea Party movement get to where it's at. And you've got one guy who's trying to take over the whole thing and make a profit off of all, everyone else's work.
That's Judson Phillips you're talking about.
Yes, yes. I mean, the average person in Tennessee can't even afford to go to this thing. What he's trying to add to his bottom line from it. It's not like he created the Tea Party movement in Tennessee.
On the other hand, he was entrepreneurial enough to set up the convention. Doesn't that recommend him in a way?
Well, I applaud entrepreneurship, but again, like I say, I think it's a case where a lot of people created this movement because they're concerned about where the country's going, they're concerned about the debt, they're concerned about what's going on in D.C., and I get concerned when I see all these people getting elbowed out of the way so one guy can try to make money in part off of their hard work.
Tell us more about what you referred to and what Tom Fitton has referred to as the movement.
Well, the Tea Party movement, you know, I've been to a couple of them down here in Myrtle Beach, and gosh, it's just a lot of ordinary citizens who I think are very concerned about what's going on in Washington. They're seeing an incredible expansion of government power, and they're worried about what's going to happen to their children with the way the deficit is climbing at a fantastic rate.
Is that all? Just that? What about President Obama?
Well, they're not fans of Barack Obama's. He's the guy who's doing that. He's the one who's expanding the government. He's the one who's got the out-of-control spending. So I don't think it's all about President Obama. I think if you had, gosh, President John Edwards, God help us all, or President Hillary Clinton, and they were doing the same things, you'd have the same reaction.
Do a lot of people feel that, a lot of conservatives, that they were let down by George W. Bush?
You know, I think George W. Bush is a social conservative. I think conservatives bought into his foreign policy ideals. But, yeah, I think a lot of Republicans felt like physically he let them down. He's not a physical conservative. He's not a small government guy. And I think a lot of conservatives felt like, yeah, George Bush didn't do us any favors as president. They look back and look at we had control of the House. We had control of the Senate. We had the presidency. And what did he do with it? He squandered it in their eyes and didn't really have a lot of respect for the conservative movement out there, the people who helped put him in office.
So are you and other Tea Party people looking for an alternative to both the Republicans and the Democrats?
I think that there are very few people like that. That's an angle that gets played up a lot. But what I keep hearing again and again is that people want the Republican Party to straighten out and deliver the type of government people want. They don't want a third party because, let's face it, a third party just guarantees that the Republicans and the third party lose while the Democrats permanently stay in power.
Again, John Hawkins runs the blog rightwingnews.com. Tony Shreve, back to you in Dandridge, Tennessee, with the American Patriot taxpayers. Do you agree with that? Patriotic taxpayers. Or are you looking for a third way, an alternative to the Democrats and the Republicans?
No, I agree with that totally. I don't think we need a third party. I think that hopefully the Tea Party movement can instill the values back into the Republican Party and hopefully get it on the right track, like he had said.
Tom Fitton, you are, as president of Judicial Watch, call your organization nonpartisan. Are you on board with the idea that it's really the Republicans that are the target here?
Oh, what I think is extraordinary is how apart the Tea Party movement has been from the Republican establishment and how nervous it is about the movement and how responsive Democrats have been or appeared to be in response to some of their concerns. So, I think this is a movement that affects both parties, and Democrats, whether they want to admit it or not, are trying to calculate some of their rhetoric to appeal to those concerned about the issues the Tea Partiers are concerned about, which is the rapid growth of government, the lack of accountability, really the corruption here in Washington, D.C., which cuts across both parties. And with respect to President Bush, you know, my perception is that they really left him, and what spurred the movement began with the massive government financial bailouts in the beginning of the end of his term that were doubled down by President Obama. And, that more than anything else, in my view, set people off. And as a result, you're seeing, as I said, both Democrats and Republicans trying to ride this wave.
Are the Democrats, do you think, going to be able to shift the emphasis of their entire party, or are they more likely to side with Republicans?
You know, we're an anti-corruption watchdog. When Republicans ran against corruption in 1994, they took over Congress. Democrats ran against corruption in 2006, and they took over Congress. It seems to me that the party that it shows a commitment and consistent commitment, and a commitment in a serious way to combating government corruption, could appeal to both of these folks. And So this corruption issue is a jump ball, as far as I'm concerned, for the parties.
Tom Fitton, president of Judicial Watch, a conservative, nonpartisan legal watchdog, one of the sponsors of the convention in Nashville. David Weigel is a senior reporter for the website The Washington Independent, covers conservative politics and the Tea Party movement as well. And David, it's good to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tell us, if you will, to what extent the Republican Party mechanisms or machinery is getting involved, first with this convention, secondly with the Tea Party movement in general.
The Republican Party itself is not that really at all involved in the convention. I mean, I'm going to be there. I'm going to see who shows up and if local organizers have decided to make it part of their agenda. But this is kind of a sui generis event that everyone else has been talking about that's dissolved a little bit. For the most part, though, Republicans are incredibly successful in transferring the Tea Party energy to their own campaigns. I mean, and while Tom Fitton was just talking about how these people were angry at George Bush for a tarp, I mean, they're basically pushing a door that was already open. They're pushing a Republican Party that was moving to the right, further to the right, but doing it with real grassroots energy and organizing power.
There have been some candidates, though, who have been labeled as Tea Party candidates, one of them by Fox News, he says, without his approval. And a lot of people in the Tea Party movement have complained about that and said, wait a minute, we don't have candidates like that.
Well, it's true. When I talk to Tea Party activists, mostly all they need to adopt somebody is for them to speak at a Tea Party and have a reasonably credible record. Marco Rubio in Florida actually is a very mainstream politician. Jeb Bush supports him. A lot of the Bush infrastructure supports him. He was Speaker of the House there. But he spoke at Tea Parties, and his opponent, Governor Charlie Crist, supported the stimulus, so he was adopted by the movement. I think it's generally often overplayed, the division between Tea Parties and mainstream Republicans. So for the most part, I don't want to invent some percentage, but it's a heavy percentage of Republican candidates who are going to be acceptable to Tea Party activists.
Now tell us about the Tea Party Express.
Oh, the Tea Party Express is a offshoot of Our Country Deserves Better PAC, which is a Republican PAC, you know, a partisan PAC, but one that exists a little bit more further from the mainstream of the California Republican Party, for where it started. Howard Kalugian, who is a California assemblyman, is on board, and Mark Williams, who is a California radio talk show host, on board.
And so is Sal Russo, who's been a Republican operative in California for many years.
Right. I mean, it was a project of these guys who were not really running the show in the California Republican Party, and they really, the first time most people, I think, were aware of them was when they ran an ad thanking Sarah Palin for running for vice president before Thanksgiving 2008. So they jumped in with both feet to the Tea Party movement and started running these national bus tours. It actually was very divisive within the Tea Party movement. There was a split, actually, in Tea Party patriots between people who thought it was worth going on this and endorsing the events that show up in their towns. Amy Kramer left Tea Party Patriots because she was going to go on this tour. But they've come around. I mean, there's a lot of anger at the idea that they are collecting money for Republican causes and spending ads against Harry Reid, and this money is going back to people like Sal Russo and Mark Cunningham. But I see it more and more as an example of Tea Party people basically being okay with being co-opted by the Republican Party.
Sarah Palin is going to a Tea Party Express event
right in
Nevada, Searchlight, Nevada, the hometown of Harry Reid, the Democratic leader in the Senate, trying to unseat him.
That's the thing. It just gives a focus and a political edge to what had been happening. Let's remember, the Tea Party movement began, yeah, people were angry about TARP, but there weren't anti-Bush protests in 2008. It started after Rick Santelli yelled about the mortgage plan in February. Well, actually, that was January and February 2009. So it was diffuse, and it was just about how they didn't like the way government was going. But increasingly, people who are pointing them to Republican causes they can adopt are taking the leadership of the movement. A lot of the people who don't like the Tea Party Express work with Freedom Works, which is run by Dick Armey, the former House Majority Leader, and which has a PAC that supports exclusively Republican candidates. You know, they'll say this thing. They might support a candidate who checks off all the boxes on their issues, but realistically, it's going to be Republicans. So, you know, at every level, people are the momentum of this movement is toward helping Republicans beat Democrats and electing as conservative a Congress as possible.
Freedom Works, with Dick Garmey, is not participating in the convention in
Nashville.
It's not.
Really,
he says this isn't his kind of event.
But instead, they're planning another round of giant rallies. They had activists come to D.C. The end of last month for a training session, but all to the same goal. It's just the Tea Party convention became a little bit less seemly than some of the other stuff these guys are getting up to.
David Weigel, once again, senior reporter for the website The Washington Independent. I want to go back to John Hawkins with rightwingnews.com. You hear anything now that you disagree with regard to the close association between the Republicans and the Tea Party movement?
Well, I wouldn't entirely agree with Dave. Just to give you an example, when I spoke at the Myrtle Beach Tea Party, I made a joke, sort of a cutting joke, about Lindsey Graham, and everybody loved it. They laughed. But you say something nice about Jim DeMint, and the crowd roars. So there's certain types of politicians who aren't going to be popular with the Tea Party. I mean, John Cornyn's another example. One of my favorite videos of the year was him getting lustily booed at an Austin Tea Party because people don't like the guy. And he's a pretty conservative guy. It's just they don't like him.
Lindsey Graham and Jim DeMint, both senators from South Carolina, viewed very differently by Tea Party movers.
Absolutely. Sarah Palin, people love her. But, Michael Steele, for example, they turned down his attempt to go to a Tea Party, Eric Odom's branch of the Tea Party guys out there. So there is a little bit of variation, although I will agree, overall, the Tea Party helps the Republican Party. It's a movement that's going to help the Republican Party, and they would be wise to do everything they can to help and encourage it.
John Cornyn, of course, senator from Texas. Michael Steele, Republican National Party chair. Tony Shreve, back to you in Dandridge, Tennessee. What do you say to that?
Well, I'm gonna agree and disagree. I know for our group, we're nonpartisan, and I don't necessarily think that we're always going to lean to the Republican side. If a good, conservative, independent, or Democrat was to come along, I think that we may support that person. I'd like to get away from people thinking that the Tea Party movement's just made up of all Republicans. I know in our group we have lifelong Democrats, we have independent conservatives, we have lifelong Republicans. So to label the Tea Party as just all Republican is going the wrong direction.
Tom Fitton with Judicial Watch. Again, your organization, nonpartisan in its standing. What about what David Weigel is saying, and what about the practical politics of the matter? Is there really much chance of getting a lot of Democrats to move in the direction that the Tea Party wants to go?
Well, what I thought is, we're going down. I'll be speaking tomorrow, and I'll be tearing both Republicans and Democrats apart. So, we don't have much patience in terms of corruption for either party. And I think what's interesting about the Massachusetts election result is that it shows that the Tea Party activists, the ones out there in the streets, the ones attending the conventions or going to training, they're reflective of the views of many other Americans who don't go out there on the streets, including Democrats and independents. So this Tea Party movement is representative of more than just the Republicans, more than just conservatives, but Democrats and independents who are concerned about the rapid size and growth and direction of government. And in the end, that may help Republicans, and I'm not going to dispute your experts as there who thought about it probably more closely than we have, both members of both party would do well to understand that this is reflective of views of a wide swath of Americans as opposed to a narrow ideological section.
David Weigel with the Washington Independent. Has the influence of the Tea Party movement in Massachusetts been exaggerated to a certain extent when you consider that Marsha Cookley, the Democrat, the Attorney General, didn't campaign, and when she did campaign, made an awful lot of mistakes very close to the end and close to the election itself, whereas Scott Brown, very attractive Republican candidate, went out and really beat the bushes in Massachusetts. How much did his victory have to do with that dynamic rather than the Tea Party movement?
Well, I think you're right to point out, and I think a lot of Democrats in Washington have forgotten, that this was her race to lose and she lost it. But she could have made those mistakes. Remember, this is, I think, a 4.5-5-point victory for him. She could have made those mistakes in 2008 and probably given them a scare and won anyway. He was able to do this because of the massive amounts of conservative-leaning independents and conservative Republicans who have been activated since the election. Massachusetts is one of those states where just Republicans had no reason to really get excited for a long time. Then they were excited because of the Tea Party movement. A thing I'll say about Brown is that he actually had a more liberal record than the average Tea Party, Tea Party activist would tolerate. He spoke at Tea Party, sure, but he voted for Massachusetts' version of a health care reform. He made noises about he is technically pro-choice. We can however you divide that. So he was, I think, the most successful co-opter so far of Tea Party energy, and certainly on the ground in Massachusetts, people who've been making this movement happen nationwide all came there. The heads of Tea Party Patriots were at his victory party. Jenny Beth Martin, Mark Meckler, Tea Party activists like Eric Odom were on the ground with this research project where they were going to the polls and making sure that liberals weren't stealing votes or stopping people from voting or casting fake ballots. I mean, they went all in on it. I think the more interesting aspect of it was he was able to use this movement without checking a lot of purity boxes.
Tony Shreve, back to you. You're the one that used the term purity, pure intention, I think, was your phrase earlier. Some people have said since the Massachusetts election that Scott Brown may be a Republican in name only. A lot of the organizations, the moneyed organizations that you've been critical of, put big money into his campaign. Is that one of the things you're concerned about, that they could elect people that you don't really feel are purely part of the movement that you're a part of yourself?
Well, I believe in Massachusetts what happened was, he was the better of the two. Obviously, a lot of people don't agree with his pro-choice, views. However, he is the 41st vote that can keep this health care bill from passing. And I think with his election, I think that's where the reason people were putting money into his campaign was because we're adamantly against the health care bill, and he was our hope to keeping it from being passed.
So John Hawkins of RightWingNews.com, does that mean that even Tea Partiers sometimes have to recognize the need for a compromise and taking the lesser of evils, given what the options are?
Well, sure, but I think he's exactly right. They looked at this and said, you know what? This guy can drive a dagger into the heart of Barack Obama's agenda. He can kill the health care bill. Why would we not want that guy? It's been a very motivating election for Republicans across the country and conservatives to see Ted Kennedy's seat, as they call it, go to the Republicans. I think it's a huge, very savvy win. And the Tea Party movement, I think, played a big role. They made a lot of phone calls from across the country, poured a lot of money into that campaign, and absolutely. I think it's a very big deal.
David Weigel, a final question to you, the Washington Independent. What's it going to mean for Sarah Palin, do you think, to appear at what has become a very controversial event?
I think Sarah Palin's pretty bulletproof, and most people are not going to be familiar with a story that's mostly trafficked on sites like Red State, sites like Right Wing News, MSNBC. You know, they're going to see, actually, her speech on Fox and MSNBC as a sort of national address from a minister with a portfolio who leads the conservative movement. I don't think she's going to get blowback either from the Tea Party Express tour. I mean, I've talked to some Tea Party activists who are angry that she's indulging these aspects of the movement they see as scammy, in the words of Eric Erickson. But she's just too popular. She's, like if Bono failed to tip a waiter at a restaurant, I don't think it would hurt him. It's the same thing here. She's just too much of a leader of the movement to really get dinged.
David Weigel, a senior reporter for the website The Washington Independent, covering the Tea Party movement and conservative politics. Many thanks for being with us. John Hawkins with RightWingNews.com, part of the conservative movement. Tony Shreve, also part of the movement, American Patriotic Taxpayers, local Tea Party organizer in Dandridge, Tennessee. Tom Fitton, president of Judicial Watch, sponsoring the convention this week, a nonpartisan organization, however, a legal watchdog group in Washington. Thanks to all of you and our earlier guest, Kate Zernike of The New York Times. We'll see what happens as the days go on. This is To the Point from PRI. Spending on health care has grown to a record 17.3% of the nation's entire economy, and the federal government could be picking up more than half as soon as next year. We'll hear more about a report out today in a moment on To the Point.
For more information about To The Point or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/To The Point.
We're only back with Reporter's Notebook on To The Point. There's some stunning figures out today on health care spending, the work of the independent actuaries at the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. That's called CMS. Noam Levy reports for the Los Angeles Times. And Noam, good to have you back on our show.
My pleasure.
It's a kind of a common phrase that health care spending takes up 1/6 of the economy. Now it's moving up toward 1/5 of the economy. Tell us about how fast it's moving.
Well, it took its biggest leap in that direction in half a century last year, jumping from 16.2% of the economy of all spending of gross domestic product to 17.3%. That 1.1 percentage point increase is larger than at any point since the government started gathering this data in 1960. So pretty dramatic uptick.
And a total spending we're talking about of $2.5 trillion.
It's a lot of money, and it's going up. It's projected to keep going up pretty steadily for the next decade, and in fact reach that 1/5 of the U.S. economy by 2020.
Now, one of the corollaries of this is that Medicare and Medi-Cal are now Medicaid are now spending so much money that federal spending on health care may be half the total.
Federal and state government spending on health care will make up 50% of 50 cents of every dollar spent on health care in the United States, which is a fairly stunning number, I think, given the common critique in this country that that nobody wants government-run health care. It's interesting. I just note, by way of an aside, there are many European countries who in the popular image are considered more socialized in the way that they organize their healthcare systems, that spend a fraction of that amount by government compared to what the private sector pays. So we have a system that doesn't necessarily conform to some of its stereotypes, I think.
So we can continue to argue, as the Congress has been arguing for a long time, over exactly how that money is spent and whether a private providers are, in fact, the ones that are in control of it and to what extent they are. But let's stick with the broader numbers for the purposes of this conversation. What's driving this incredible rise in the cost of health care?
Well, there's sort of two parts here. The first is a phenomenon that has been underway for years, and that is with advances in technology and utilization, with the growing prevalence of chronic diseases, obesity, and so forth, the nation's healthcare tab just keeps going up and up and up. And the phenomenon that occurred last year that I think accounts for a large part of this big jump is the fact that the entire economy contracted last year in this biggest economic downturn as we've heard since the Great Depression. So while the overall economy was contracting, healthcare spending, interestingly, continued to go up. So its share of the total economy increased particularly dramatically.
Well, now, of course, there was a lot of criticism of the sausage making in Washington and what ultimately emerged, the bill in the Senate. To what extent would it have, or would it, will it, if it ever passes, reduce healthcare costs?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, or I guess in this case the trillion-dollar question. The expansion in coverage, so the growing number of people who would have health insurance, would probably tend to actually increase the amount of total spending in the economy on healthcare. Although it's interesting because the same group of actuaries who produced the report we're talking about now last month actually produced a preliminary analysis of that Senate bill. And they concluded that, in fact, yes, over the next 10 years, if this health reform bill makes it into law, there would be more spending than there would normally. But the interesting thing, I think, actually, is that phenomenon of increased spending if you have more people who have coverage is mitigated by a number of provisions in the bill designed to control particularly spending by Medicare, both in putting some cuts in place on what the federal government pays hospitals and doctors, as well as some programs to change the way that healthcare is delivered, make it more efficient, things like bundling payments, penalizing hospitals that have very high readmission rates. These kinds of things would actually mitigate the growth slightly in healthcare that one would normally expect if you had more people with insurance.
Just have a minute left, but in the event that there's a lot of attention paid to these numbers that we're talking about right now, it may well re-inflame the debate over healthcare. Where does it stand right at this point?
Well, there's still a lot of talk going on. The president has said that he wants to get a bill done. I think there's a similar interest in doing that by the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, and the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid. So there is actually a surprising amount of consensus by Democratic leaders in Washington that they want to advance a bill. But the challenge now is to find a way to do that that makes rank-and-file Democrats who are nervous after the Massachusetts election willing to go along. So there's still a negotiating going on right now, and I think we might get a little more clarity in the next week or so.
Noam Levy, always good to talk with you, healthcare reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Good to have you.
Thanks so much.
Today's program produced by Katie Cooper with Christian Bordahl and Sonia Geis. Our technical director is Mike Newport. Our managing producer is Karen Radziner. Email us or share your thoughts on our comment page, kcrw.com/to the point. I'm Marvin Olney. Join us again for To the Point, produced live and podcast as a co-production of KCRW Santa Monica and Public Radio International.
PRI, Public Radio International.